Poems for All the Annettes, published in 1962 by Contact Press. This is the book at which my style started to change very radically and became a lot more difficult to... In other words, there was no consistency to it as there was before. Poem for One of the Annettes. Which one of you? Well, now I recognize that tear-stained, pro-Semitic nose, shaped wonderfully for your man Murray's kisses. But he left, didn't he? Oh, Annette, cry like hell for Columbus, Ohio, and Taos, New Mexico, where he is and you're not, as if the world had ended, and it has. Or the Anita with undressed hips that could break a man in half in bed, and big, unpainted Rubens breasts affixed to a living woman, swinging high over Montreal, as if the whole damn town was a whorehouse full of literarily inclined millionaires, with the end for your kind of dirty storybook love, and it is. Or Jeanine from Poland, who's a citizen of Canada, knocked up in Montreal by a Yank from Columbus, Ohio, and abandoned in the time the abortion took place in the town of Mount Royal, and the fetus had no name. Cry for your own bad judgment in loving him, with good tears that will not fall, but stay, in the blue beginning of every evening, when factory watchmen are coming on duty, and silent lovers are visible as moths hovering on street corners, in eccentric silver orbit, as permanent as any in Maisonneuve's cynical metropolis. Cry the common sickness with ordinary tears, as if they would flood the whole quasi-romantic town of Montreal with the light of your darkness, and follow the gutters and sewers glowing down through sewage disposal plants by the river and into the industrial waste of your dreams to the sea, the shapeless, mothering, one-celled sea. Oh, Anita, they do. I think I stumbled somewhere in that, didn't I? A little bit. Anyway. Okay. A little bit difficult to read, I find. Poem for One of the Annettes. Which one of you? Oh, now I recognize that tear-stained, pro-Semitic nose shaped wonderfully for your man Murray's kisses. But he left, didn't he? Oh, Annette, cry like hell for Columbus, Ohio, and Taos, New Mexico, where he is and you're not, as if the world had ended, and it has. Or the Anita with undressed hips that could break a man in half in bed, and big unpainted Rubens breasts affixed to a living woman, swinging high over Montreal, as if the whole damn town was a whorehouse full of literarily inclined millionaires, with the end for your kind of dirty storybook love, and it is. Or Jeanine from Poland, who's a citizen of Canada, knocked up in Montreal by a Yank from Columbus, Ohio, and abandoned, and the abortion took place in the town of Mount Royal, and the fetus had no name. Cry for your own bad judgment in loving him, with good tears that will not fall but stay, in the blue beginning of every evening, when factory watchmen are coming on duty, and silent lovers are visible as moths hovering on street corners, in eccentric silver orbit, as permanent as any in Maisonneuve's cynical metropolis. Cry the common sickness with ordinary tears, as if they would flood the whole quasi-romantic town of Montreal with the light of your darkness, and follow the sewers and gutters glowing down through sewage disposal plants by the river and into the industrial waste of your dreams to the sea, the shapeless, mothering, one-celled sea. Oh, Anita, they do. Is that any better? This is just as difficult. It's got long, long lines collecting the square root of minus one. Or, stone blood makes thirsty vampires. To owe money, this the creditors think important. I have one eye always on the curious stranger asking questions about me in the village store. The other in the rural mailbox. Containing a viper? Containing a piece of paper that says somebody, incredibly, there's some mistake, owes me money? Broken agreements, contracts, promises, liens, and mortgages, each calling for a slight alteration of judgment of self. Every decision, word, thought, positive act, causes the sum of the parts of a man's self to change, and he betrays himself into the future, day after uncertain day, or else confirms the durable, fiery, inveterate bone and of fossil virtue. But reappraisal after the lost, lovely, cutaway pound of flesh turns rotten in the creditor's deep freeze, or you rise on the bloody butcher's block and escape screaming, tells the creditor to go to hell, makes a man nervously uncertain about the relative importance of front and rear doorbells. Owing money to friends is another thing. Owing favors, embarrassed smiles, small courtesies, suspended personal opinions, each of uncertain value, but payable in smiling demand. And the puffed-up, momentarily powerful, friendly creditor annuls and invalidates all handshakes with notes to hand. However, flattery involves me happily in all this attention, that a creditor should think so valuable something it's possible for me to have. I'm glad to agree that the amount of the debt is worth much more than I am. He thinks it's worth more than the star-filled galaxy, gold of the fabled Indies, dull glitter in a rural township, transmuted to odd shapes of honor, located in the duodenal intestine. The guts of a man hung up wet and heavy, drying on the snake flint fences. Oh, shit. Duodenal? Okay. I better take it. Yeah. I'm glad to agree that the amount of the debt is worth much more than I am. He thinks it's worth more than the star-filled galaxy. Gold of the fabled Indies, dull glitter in a rural township. Transmuted to odd shapes of honor, located in the duodenal intestine. The guts of a man hung up wet and heavy, drying on the snake fences, swinging ghost-like from power lines. Oh, creditors are importunate lovers here, in the canceled sunlight, in the winter of my indebtedness. In the gray and quiet country, where wooers yell imprecations under a faithless moon. And in the city, between the neon blinkings, under the blanket of noise, still in the darkness, lover to lover, pleasantly insists, with the same flattery ascribes to the wished-for thing all value, that bodies open portals to each, according to reciprocal agreements, and unversed hands rehearse the earth music together, that smooth, beautiful faces contrive to contort and create the frog fetus, which, leaping onto the gray sheets, shrieks and pries apart the lovers. This on demand, by prior agreement in parked automobiles, four-dimensional doorways, whispered moonlight rapprochements, negotiations on street corners, that the beautiful debt be paid, willingly or unwillingly, and with or without pleasure. Who's that come knocking at my door? One called, Importunate. Okay. This one's been revised. Uncle John on Cote de Neige. I put his real name afterwards. I can't stand it. One of my habits is I like to have the real names in there, even if I get sued. I haven't been yet, but I might get yet. Uncle John on Cote de Neige. It's Uncle Fred in the poem, so I suppose I should stick to that. Join this family group. Join, but stay outside. Tension so strong, the old, effeminate, and very English prof caresses his Greek wife as if the gods of the Greeks were all warm and alive in her body, and as if those lousy old gods outside his skin might cry aloud, decide against miscegenation and the English verb to be, after all. The doll daughter and rascally brother-in-law complete an equilibrium as precarious as the one Daedalus invented for his molting son. If one of these should leave the room, he might not return. Yes, never return. None of them dare imagine what that would be like. Strange towns look, or being famous overnight, or being a murderer who grows tulips. Nothing happens. Uncle Fred fills up and in all the crevices of time with talk that recurs and recurs, and decants the cream nepenthe of books and sad words from a prepared reel of authentic quotations, so that reality is only an inflection of an eclectic electronic device known as human. Uncle Fred swings me into the family syllogism, and giddy we ride, merry we ride out of decadence and into the new barbarism, caught up with Greek wife and doll daughter and rascally brother-in-law, who sells me the Parthenon, and a semantic device which I think, before Descartes, therefore I am tangled in plumb lines and aerial lianas, trapped in vortices and whirlpools, tripped up in tiger sentences, caught in small thoughts of Uncle Fred. Oh, Uncle Fred. The lengthening vowels drawl into a soft, slurred holiness and mulibrity. The clever tricks of speech receive expected moderate applause. Philosophy of the Renaissance and the menopause. And terror that accustomed things, the mental image we have of life, is after all insufficient. In the midst of patterns, one turns to eccentricity, the cultivation of strange hobbies. In the semi-darkness, his eyes glow. Meantime, the faulty, sponsoring mind of the tightrope walker analyzes his vertigo. Goodbye to Uncle Fred. Goodbye to Greek wife and doll daughter and somewhat rascally brother-in-law. Goodbye, 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 goodbye to be, and he is, for a long, long time. Yet there he, alive-o, is, back where I, in the next room, remember him. Jesus Christ, that's hard to read. It's got so many twists and phrases. TV program on Sunday. Artificial insemination of cattle. That poor neurotic cow. The only way that black thundercloud of a bull can ever be forgotten is to chase the cow with a Model A around and around a 50-acre field on Sunday at 20 miles an hour, all the night of a long moon. Gently nudge her with fender and hot radiator. At dawn, she turns to stare reproachfully and say, "Now what the hell would she say? What would she say in that false dawn at the stake of all her tomorrows, with a great black curly bull screaming high and castrato in the dawn-wet hills forever?" This one's even tougher to read. I have never read it at a reading. It's called Archaeology of Snow. Body tale at first. What happened in the snow? What happens in bed or anywhere? I said, "Oh, Anna, here, 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 here." But gone, Anna, next day gone, gone next day, just gone, to Melbourne, Vienna, or that place I forget in Debullion Street, and get lost looking, and can't find any more, and go home. Day after next day I found her heavy buttocks in the snow, printed there like a Cambrian trilobite. Except the girl was not there, but was there also somehow. Veritable as proof of a lie, or truth of an illusion. I cut a stick and shoved it into the snow beside her to mark the spot. O hound of faithfulness, studied the beautiful outline. O Helen of Illyria with the big behind. Inline, outline, interior cross-section, vivisected by prying, blunt, gradual gray day. As I remember now, it didn't snow for quite a long stretch, and there was a spell of cold weather to fracture two of the balls of the pawnbroker on Craig Street, if any, and even if there weren't, it would have if there had been. The beautiful outline, ah, exquisite as wind, blowing and pressing its shape on water, like an invisible woman. For a month's weeks, even, I went there, where she was and was and was, or was with no surcease at all. But weather got warmer, icicles melted, and spring medicine dropped on hot necks from cool medicine droppers. The snow that indicated Anna was gray as gray was grayer was rotten, as an old man's worn-out old underpants with ragged crotch. I bent over her, sniffing sadly for Anna. I said to myself sadly, "Of course she's done for, and I'm a fool, of course a fool," weakly watching her vanish. "But use your head, man. Use the dirty snow to make repairs. More glue, man, more hope to fill in the melted places. Fill in the flaws and stretch marks. Patch the dints and dimples of this impatient to depart, eroded and almost erased mannequin with snow, with patient snow." Now she's still there, silently still there, sweetly still here, a few more moments to hang in a private art gallery of permanent imaginings. No, I say, she's quite gone, or will be soon, and it's hardly surprising, seeing that spring is coming, and brooks and water and earth are moving, moving, moving. Yes, I say, she's gone, but the snow itself wasn't her. Nor any part of her, wasn't a lovely woman, indicated one, pointed to one, and what the snow surrounds is not perishable. She must be still there. She has to be there. Only the snow has melted. The form is here. Has to be. Must be. As if we were all immortal, in some way I've not fathomed. As if all we are coexists in so many forms, we encounter the entire race of men just by being here, alive here. Ourselves amorous, ourselves surly, ourselves smiling, and immortal as hell, each a valid self, moving as Anna does in the subdivisions of time, in the split fractions of moments. And in the plume fields of light are the shapely deeds of our flesh, the lovely omniscience of women. We need to exist but once, in the green shadows, in the sunlit places, and there's no end of humans. My God, what an agony to be subdivided like this, and to be continuous, and to be everywhere like a bunch of children's blocks, disappearing inside each other, my God, and not being also, my God, also, what grandeur. Negroes on San Antoine. This one comes from living in Montreal. The San Antoine district in Montreal is the Negro district. Here there's a blackness under the sun, where tracks cross, and glum groceries are molars, set in slums that no forceps budge, rooted deep in the continental jawbone. Here their peculiar lankiness flaunts exaggerated curves, repressed by the dwarfish architecture into black goldfish. A girl fumbling with being a woman, unaccustomed to having breasts and being looked at. Here on holidays come black New Yorkers, jazz combos and beat musicians. The clean pride of Jomo Kenyatta, dulled in the face of a CNR porter. In front of a kilted Scottish girl, on a billboard praising cigarettes, a swaying boy forgets what century it is and dances. I have stood on the sweep of Mount Royal, thinking of Israeli gunners in the Sinai Peninsula, farmers with rifles in the Negev, Spartacus, waiting for ships to come, and staring alone across the Straits of Messina. I have stood on the sweep of Mount Royal, thinking of Israeli gunners on the Sinai Peninsula, farmers with rifles in the Negev, Spartacus waiting for ships to come, and staring alone across the Straits of Messina. Lumumba dead in Kapri Katanga province. A janitor in San Antoine picked up for questioning. How human history is meaningless in the non-involved mountain, in the admirable stillness called death, high over the stopped city, permitting no human heartbeat to reach this hilltop. From the cruciform building in Place Ville Marie, no noise of riveters. For Norma, in lieu of an orgasm. 5 years without one? My God, girl, that husband of yours is a sky-blue idiot. What's it like, my dear? I guess nobody knows what thunder's like, or pain, or what fleshly couturier lures the modest shop girl into an ultimate nudity. No one ever lived very long in the exaggerated zone and rumpel-stilt-skinned place that fucking is, or pushed a mathematic past a prepared landscape. In fact, you are not to believe in pain, sorrow, or death at all until you arrive there, my dear, unarmed on the wonderful battlefield. Oh, well, if words must suffice, it's the werewolf metamorphosis in which animals and men transfer themselves painfully, and fur sprouts from ivory breast and thigh. Wolf's head gleams white and somewhat human, and in the forest there is a rumor of love. Mind Process, Rhea Fawcett, dated Montreal, 1961. The faucet is cool, green-shadowed spring. Some stocky old water god with knobby knees sits there making magic. Or a grim, sunburned Roman engineer came with a lease, kneels in the flooded kitchen to curse this damned aqueduct. No such fantasy of metal and water, not the unreasonable slim princess, crawling continuously from every drop and hiccuping. But the flash picture, the idea of faucet. And I can't make it be what it isn't by saying, or take the shape of a word's being. For a multiple identity confuses anyway. There must be a single total, all water, torrents of God stuff. Absurd delight in this sort of thing, as if the sprawled mind was exercising, asked its sibyl self questions, grins derisively behind the hand at its own shell game. Obviously the idea of faucet is its own function, a lovesome sound, God wot, dripping through the night, concentrating desperately on retaining its faucet shape. Water, keep thinking water, you'll be all right. Essence? Analyze the metal constituents, nickel, steel, imposed form. But I keep thinking of mineral molecules before and after they got there. The lyric rubble, mind that holds and joins. Mind that gets bloody tired. You too, reader, need shock after shock. For myself, continuous discovery. Else, in the midst of somnolence, defeat after defeat. Now relax in the cerebral split levels of mind. And silence on the fourth floor in an apartment where nothing works very well. And round the city's misty hemisphere, lights come on like discordant signals. Leap out beyond the island's ending and fill the hazy azimuths of earth. Elegy. She screams at snakes, and so I killed one, thinking it necessary to protect my eardrums. I pounded it without conviction, because of my love for a lady. An hour later, the corpse moved. Front end under a board for shade. Hurt part awaiting another blow. Head raised, expecting one. I had to kill it all over again, a second time, and did. In spite of what I say, I am like a little snake's dead. Did I? Elegy. She screams at snakes, and so I killed one. Okay? Scarcities. I dreamed your hair was on fire, and you ran, its bright scarf flung back to the wind. And once at your side while you slept, I looked at whiteness enough for fields of level snow, and there were no fences. Today in April, snow is scarce. But I found some in nearby woods, a rare inch or so, covered with a leaf. Umbrella, love. The drummed hymn of rain. Not a lineal tick-tock, unlike time, or a measurable emotion like my love for you. Mea culpa in the liver, metric cadence of gallstones, obfuscation of the scrotum. One trusts that in the human interval, love may be conducted in a more decorous manner, not shake the whole auditorium. Water lies around in odd shapes. Puddles are like deeds, actually, flattened gravestones, or would you say like words, dear? Listen, my darling, I'm talking to you. Pay some attention. Evaporation is also death, or sinking into the earth, sending its live green tongue a mile down. If I were to go there and return and speak to you later, will you know my tone? Spring song. Old father me, sweetly hymning pike spawning, frogs larruping loopholes of silence with ditties of deathless blasphemy. Rabbits turn annoyed. Having shit on the garbage all winter, they've a vested interest in its rotting now in warm weather. Crying birds somewhere are overheard in the clouds plotting. Old father me, doing push-ups under an old Pontiac and attempting to change the oil. Include me out of it all? Never. Even the farm girl is my two eyes pressed against her jiggling jelly buttocks, walking down the lane to the mailbox. I'm rueful and amused at the young man's vehement twitching lechery inside an old man's inconvenient morals. Under an ancient Pontiac in the butter-yellow sunlight. You be damned, you professionally unhappy philosophers, followers of sickening Nietzsche, and prophesiers of doom girls with two heads and four buttocks, going down that lane is much too much of a good thing now. The world's pain is a little away from here, and the hawk's burst of speed that claws a fish from its glass house is earlier and later than now, under an old Pontiac, with dandelions ready for winemaking, and my hands high under the skirts of the world. My God, I'll never get to change the oil. Postscript. I say the stanza ends, but it never does, there being something continual, apart from the blaze of man, in a woman. At least he somehow thinks there is. After a parting grimly convivial, nostalgia comes like an old shaman, crossing Côte d'Neige and the rush hour. But she is far from here, in another city, smiles there, sleeps with another man, and bites in bed, like sad music about unfaithful lovers, old faces, burnt toast. Nothing I do not recognize and love again, but recurs monotonously, as though even this long silence was metrically arranged, and soon there will be words. I say the stanza never ends, and it never does. One of his mistresses is found missing. I can't say what I know in my body of you. I can only write poetry, and it is not the same. It's not what I feel. It's a record of failure in life and verse. Christ, there's no saying it, no talking directly about anything deeply felt. So I describe a flower I saw once, with blue black petals and slender torso, whose meaning was a color. It's dead and dust underfoot now, for many years of rain, many of shining. Except for these lines, it's gone, having been witnessed once only, which is perhaps enough. Now I remember it for you, who do not greatly care. Jade Stag, Shang Dynasty, 1523-1027 BC. The sculptor remembered, cut down piled dimensions of time, dripping sand, sun-shadowed gnomons, with mnemonics of stag. Perform a lobotomy on a Shang Yin skull, negate death's illness, hence the stag, running. Fill in, complete, round off with imaginative patina, centuries sheen on going concern, bound for infinity, inching past starter's gate of past indefinite stakes with geriatric gait, bounding from month to month and into another century, arriving finally here with a bareback rider, the sculptor, without dismounting smiles, blurred face grown candid, his hand without cunning. We join them at this point for the remainder of the journey. Very short one. Poem with vase with mountain landscape. Its lines were reason for astronaut Daedalus. The vase, 76 ounces of fired clay with mathematics included, revoked its own weight, but held a mountain of hors d'oeuvre with the belted slenderness of a girl in the last pause before she's a woman. My French could be better, too.